Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Giustina. Joining us this week, Dan Clark, the author of the Capital Confidential newsletter, Times Union Bureau Chief for the Capital, covers New York government and policy. Also, before joining the Times Union, Clark was the managing editor of WMHT's New York Now and had stints at PolitiFact, the New York Law Journal, and Capital Tonight. Find out more at timesunion.com. You really decided to come back. Welcome back, Dan Clark.
Thank you very much for having me. Always happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. And what prompted me this time around was this. I got the newspaper right here. Times Union above the fold. Ex-Hochul Cuomo aide alleged Chinese agent goes to trial. And of course, you're not in the trial. We don't know exactly what's happening in the arguments, but we know the nature of the case and what's going on. It's quite stunning. And this particular person has worked for two governors in the state. Give us an update on Linda Sun.
Oh, yeah. So Linda Sun started working for the state in 2012. She was fired in 2023 after the Hochul administration realized that some fishy stuff might have been happening under her watch. She had stayed on after Andrew Cuomo had resigned and became deputy chief of staff to Governor Hochul. And then she was moved over to the Department of Labor. While she was there, she was able to secure a signed proclamation, a gubernatorial proclamation for a Chinese official coming into the U.S., which she presented. There are photos of this online. So at that point, she was interviewed by the Inspector General's office of the state and let go. Then federal prosecutors started looking at the whole situation. And last September, September 2024, that's when she was charged by federal prosecutors down in Brooklyn. And the trial started Wednesday.
But it's quite something knowing that, you know, I think it's obvious on the national level that we are in relations with China and are worried about things just like this, of them infiltrating the government in different ways. And here we are. How is it that a New York public official doesn't realize this? And what kind of background checks are we doing at the state level?
Well, the thing is, a background check really wouldn't have prompted anything in this case. The things that Linda Sun was doing when she was trying to influence state government officials were not things like, you know, trying to change data policies or anything like that. She was trying to prevent Governor Cuomo and Governor Hochul from coming into contact with Taiwanese officials. As listeners probably know, Taiwan has had a long conflict with China. So her goal there, allegedly from federal prosecutors, was to prevent Hochul and Cuomo from basically cozying up to Taiwan and taking a position. Now, the thing about that is that neither governor really has a position on Taiwan. They don't have any power in that situation.
Right.
Of course, with New York being the financial capital of the world, we do have some influence. But, you know, the conflict between China and Taiwan wasn't something that was on Cuomo or Hochul's radar. So we're talking about things like rejecting invitations to events, making sure that the governors didn't come into contact with certain people. It wasn't so much sitting in on meetings and reporting back secret state information.
But it really gives you a glimpse into international relations in a sense, because we know that China really wants Taiwan back.
Oh, yeah.
And they, of course, communicate with Russia, who we see trying to take back Ukraine. So this is all tied up in the international relations of it.
Oh, yeah. No, exactly. And like I said, New York is the financial capital of the world. So we have influence over basically the entire planet on some degree, you know, every country around the globe. And when it comes to the financial industry in the U.S., I mean, we're just paramount. Texas is coming up against us. But the influence that New York could have on these relations to stifle economic pressures, things like that, could be really influential. And especially if you get the ear of a governor of New York, one of the largest states in the country, and that governor can get in the ear of the president, that's when things start to change. So if we had seen a situation, for example, like Kathy Hochul being influenced to really support Taiwan and take that position, or vice versa, she was really close with President Joe Biden. And I'm not saying that they would have talked about it, but there's always the possibility that maybe she was covertly, you know, unintentionally recruited into a campaign that she wouldn't want any part of.
Oh, it's so fascinating. We know, for example, you know, because there's no accusations of secrets or anything like that being
right.
stolen. So do we know what kind of punishment she would face?
Federal prison. I mean, that would be it. I mean, twofold. Federal prison time if she's convicted. And then China was able to offer her a lot of money in different ways. It was by helping her husband's businesses in China basically transact business. And they also got kickbacks from COVID contracts because she allegedly rigged those as well. We're talking about millions of dollars here. And they used that money allegedly to buy a very nice house in Nassau County, a Ocean View condo in Hawaii. Who doesn't want that? A bunch of luxury cars. So if they're convicted, the government could also seize all of those assets as well.
What a fascinating story. I know you'll stay on that. Well, the big news, obviously, well, there's two pieces of big news, but let's start with the big election in New York City. Zohran Mamdani, now the new Democratic Socialist mayor. It's caused all sorts of consternation among some Democrats and, of course, Republicans. But, you know, the focus for many of us in state politics, including you, Dan Clark, is that this mayor has to come to Albany to deal with a lot of issues facing the city, including taxation as well as transportation. One of the things, the buses, he wants to make free. And we've seen this week, Governor Hochul not so keen on the idea.
Right. The governor is a little bit more conservative with her spending, especially with the state facing a budget gap in this coming year of about $4 billion. It's not a small amount of money. Of course, Mayor-elect Mamdani, his tax plan, if it was enacted, would blow that right out of the water. I mean, it would be so much money coming in. That being said, there is a real fear that if you do raise taxes on high-income earners and big corporations, that they will move out of the state. What a lot of people don't know is that I think it's the top 1% of earners, or the highest percentage, generate about half of our income tax revenue. And this is a small number of people. So every one of them that leaves the state is a big hit on our tax revenue. At the same time, the number of millionaires in New York has continued to increase. So one could argue that these higher tax rates are actually having an effect on out-migration or anything of the like. With the free buses, it's the same thing. Funding, funding, funding. Where is the money going to come from? And in a year where the state is anticipating that budget gap, along with a $10 billion budget gap in the year to follow, Governor Hochul is not going to have an incentive to raise costs on people in a way that could impact revenue down the line.
And yet, Dan Clark, she endorsed him.
Yes.
For the mayorship. And he has not expressed that similar endorsement for her coming 2026 run.
Right. And his excuse for that is that the governor has not yet asked for her endorsement. And I understand that. However, her endorsement of him is going to be used as a boogeyman for Republicans for the entire election cycle coming up.
Already has been by the other candidate that's now in the race we haven't mentioned, Elise Stefanik.
Yes, exactly. And not even just that race. It'll be happening in congressional races around the state and around the country. You'll see people in Texas running for office, and the Republican opponent will use Mayor-elect Mamdani because now he is the face of the Democratic Party. It is a frustrating time, I think, for Democrats in that sense, but they're also doing the same thing with President Donald Trump. He's the boogeyman for the left. So it's a situation where we'll have this kind of proxy war in politics, where people aren't really running against each other. They're running against each other's proxies.
And there's a wedge in there called Antonio Delgado.
Yes.
The lieutenant governor who is turned against his governor is running against her. And he aligns more with Mamdani in New York City than Governor Hochul does. So you can kind of see the move by Hochul there. But I don't get the sense that his campaign yet has any real legs. And yet here he is. What's his motivation? He's a former congressman. He got out of that race. It looked like the purple district wasn't going to go his way. Then he becomes the lieutenant governor candidate. Now he's lieutenant governor. Then he says, I don't like this anymore. I'm leaving. Governor Hochul says, good riddance. We didn't want you back anyway. Now she's looking for another running mate.
Yeah, I mean, the lieutenant governor has a tough job because a lot of people around the state don't know who he is, despite being on the ticket in 2022 and a lot of people voting for him. He hasn't raised that profile enough to really make an impact in the polls. If you look at polls around him, it's not so much favorability and unfavorability. It's that a lot of people just don't know whether they want to find him favorable. That's his challenge over the next several months as we lead into the June primary. It's not an impossible thing to do. He's trying to really court the left part of the Democratic Party. And as we saw with Mamdani, that was successful in his case. The problem is that the governor has institutional support from the state party, from really any mainstream Democrat around the state. And if they get into the party chairs and everything, everyone at the ground level, this is a primary, not a general election. Democrats are going to be making this choice. So if she has them, she wins over Delgado.
Well, it's so interesting to me because the governor keeps some certain decisions very close to the vest. So, for example, you saw Delgado appearing with the Compassion and Choices group, the medical aid in dying legislation, and supporting that. But Hochul, not so much. She has not indicated which way she's going. And I know for a fact Compassion and Choices are worried about what that decision is going to be. Also, you have the Patients' Rights Coalition on the other side. And this definitional thing of, is it physician-assisted suicide or is it death with dignity? And right in the middle of this is Governor Hochul.
Yeah, I mean, that's the issue for her. It's defined in a lot of different ways. The governor is thought to be inclined to sign this bill because it has to do with, at the very root, bodily autonomy. She is big on abortion. And of course, those two issues are not the same thing, but they both deal with bodily autonomy. So the thought is that she will sign it. However, we do know that it will be used against her politically across the state. I mean, as people see this, somebody who's had a family member with a terminal illness may see this differently from somebody who has lost a family member due to suicide that didn't have a terminal illness. That's the balancing act that she has to take. And whether that works out for her politically is another question. But if she does veto it and Antonio Delgado did support it, that could lend some support his way as well.
Yeah, and I just get the sense that Congresswoman Elise Stefanik of the North Country is waiting in the wings to pounce when any of these decisions are made. And boy, did she pounce on Governor Hochul, you know, the worst governor in America. I also want to just take a little sidestep there because she released this ad. I don't know if you must have seen that ad, Dan Clark. And in that ad, she used a couple of Channel 13 reporters to repeat the phrase worst governor in America. And that had the station issue a disclaimer that they certainly did not call Governor Hochul the worst governor in America. But you see how the politics can be played here.
And not just a disclaimer. We received an email at the Times Union from a viewer or a reader and a viewer who reached out to the station to ask about it. The station replied to them that they are getting their corporate attorneys involved in the situation. So we don't know how that's going to play out. And that may be a lesson down the road to candidates running for office, especially in New York, to maybe not take reporters or anchors out of context for their political purposes. It's kind of akin to the debate around AI. How do we make the point without misleading people? And that's going to be a challenge, especially with AI really coming into politics in a big way in the mayoral race down in New York City. Of course, candidates do have to disclose when they use it, but that doesn't mean that they may use it ethically.
We're speaking with Dan Clark of the Albany Times Union. He, of course, covers New York government and politics, and he writes the very popular Capital Confidential newsletter that I pay attention to very, very closely. Just in case I'm missing anything, you know, Dan, you're on top of things there. Well, we have Elise Stefanik. Let's talk a little bit more about her. Obviously, she started off as a much more centrist Republican, and we've seen her metamorphosis as Trump came on the scene to become a Trump loyalist. She was going to be the ambassador, and then she lost that, kind of looked at as maybe a slight from President Trump. Then she indicates she wants to run for governor, makes it very clear every day, sending out press releases bashing Governor Hochul. And then she officially announces this week, as I said, with an ad that's now controversial. And yet it's difficult to win in New York State. It's a blue state. Democrats are double the number of Republicans. And yet, as we know, Republican enrollment has gone up. And upstate and Long Island in New York could be a factor for the potential for a victory for Stefanik.
Oh, absolutely. There is a path. If listeners don't remember, in 2022, Kathy Hochul only won by 6 points over Lee Zeldin at the time. Stefanik thinks that she can close that gap, and she's primarily leaning on her relationship with Trump to do that. She sees this race as a race for turnout, not so much a race for appeal. If she can get 30% of the vote in New York City, which is the standard for winning for a Republican statewide, she knows that she has to get Long Island and upstate as well. But if she wins that 30% in New York City and is able to get that support, same support upstate and on Long Island that Lee Zeldin did, and even a little bit more, she could definitely win this race. And we saw in last year's elections, every county of the state moved right, supported more of Trump than Biden did in 2020. So there is a path here for her. And I think that as she travels the state, her big challenge is going to be reaching voters who just don't know who she is, and independents who don't know if they want to vote for Kathy Hochul again. They may be looking for a change based on what's happening in their bank account.
Well, I would like to take this opportunity, Dan Clark of the Times Union, to say to both Elise Stefanik and Governor Hochul, this program is available if you'd like to get people to know you more. And I don't know why anyone who would be running for office wouldn't want to be on a statewide program to talk about their views.
Yeah,
I have some understanding of why with these two folks right now, the governor and the congresswoman, and why they won't come on. But they have a chance to change their minds, and they often do when they're running for an important office. So I hope they'll take me up on my invitation for an interview. That being said, you know, Dan Clark, the politics of New York are such that we can't not mention that at the base of all this is redistricting.
Yeah.
And you see now New York has entered into this, what I would call weaponization of the redistricting process. And to me, it's a pox on both parties. This is not democratic.
And what listeners can kind of take solace in is that in New York, we would have to pass a constitutional amendment for New York to jump into the redistricting fight
right
before 2032. So that's up to voters. If you don't want that to happen, you can vote no. And that's a multi-year process. So the first year that it could land on the ballot is 2027. So you don't have to worry about that next year, but maybe the year after you'll be looking at that. However, there is a new lawsuit down on Staten Island that could shake up this whole thing. It's challenging the 11th congressional district in New York, currently represented by Republican Nicole Malliotakis. Now, depending on the outcome of that lawsuit, a judge could order that district to be redrawn, or as a result, that judge could order all districts to be redrawn, and that would went everything up in the air and basically force redistricting at a moment where I think you're right. A lot of voters don't want to see that happen, don't want to see both parties fighting in this way.
We've seen him in court in the past of this, judge shopping to get the judge to agree to their lines.
Yes, exactly. And I think we're at a time in politics where voters are broadly dissatisfied with both parties, and they're broadly dissatisfied with the solutions that both parties have come up with for basic, you know, kitchen table issues like affordability. I don't know if redistricting is going to move the needle other than to rig the game a little bit for either side. And that's not really what democracy is about.
Well, and that's what's interesting to me politically is that the Republicans seem to embrace the right, the extreme of their party. And then on the left, the Democrats have had such a hard time of embracing, that's the establishment Democrats, the more sent, have a real hard time going way to the left. And yet you see where the people are. They're either way to the right or way to the left. And you've watched Bernie Sanders for years, and now with AOC, fill stadiums of people gravitating toward those ideas, which include things like free buses and health care and education and the basic things that people need in order to survive in the world because of the way our economy works. And yet, it's interesting to me that it's so hard to go to that left end of things because suddenly you're a communist.
Well, Democrats in New York are in a strange position in elections. It's often said that elections in Nassau County and in Westchester County really get the political feeling for the state. The problem there is that the voters in those counties are not those left Democrats. They're the establishment Democrats that
right.
people like Kathy Hochul are trying to appeal to. That being said, Bernie Sanders is an exception in the sense that this is largely generational. There's a new generation of Democrats running for office, mm-hmm. Democrats voting, who want to see the party really come in a different direction. And those are the Democrats that are increasingly getting more politically involved at these events. Whether they show up at the polls is another question. Younger voters have historically not showed up at the polls. We're seeing that change in the last few election cycles. And if they can surpass the older establishment Democrats, I think that that will force the party to go a little bit more to the left. I don't know how quickly that'll happen.
Yeah,
that's also the question.
It's also the linchpin, isn't it, in that Stefanik area, that she's counting on those that traditionally vote, mm-hmm. the turnout, to help her possibly win upstate and on Long Island, for example. And yet we have this influx of new and younger and passionate voters in many cases that tend to drift toward the left. But will they turn out? Or like my students, oh, with that election today, Professor?
Well, the other thing is we've seen this trend of young male voters going
to the right.
Going to the right.
You're right.
There is a, you know, influence from podcasters, a lot of online media that drives them that way, or in some cases drives them to the left too. There are influencers on both sides of it. Elise Stefanik, if she can seize on those younger voters, she has a real advantage here, because if Kathy Hochul can't bring out her younger voters, that means that Elise Stefanik has more to deal with than Kathy Hochul does.
Indeed. Oh, is it going to be interesting? Well, you mentioned the 11th district when it comes to the redistricting fight, but let's talk about the 12th district for a minute, because another dynasty has decided to enter into politics. That's John F. Kennedy's grandson, Jack Schlossberg. Now, he's making a run for the U.S. House. This is Jerry Nadler's seat. It's the 12th district, which covers Manhattan's Upper West Side, Upper East Side, and Midtown. But there are other candidates already in the race, and he's kind of the outsider at this point. He's young. He's done really well on social media with young people, but it's kind of funny to see a sort of Kennedy clan on the outside in a political race.
So I've been following Jack Schlossberg for a number of years now. His social media posts are about to catch up with him very quickly. He has posted things at times that are for humor, but it's a younger generation sense of humor. He posts things like saying to Usha Vance, J.D. Vance's wife, that he'll marry her if she doesn't want to be with J.D. anymore. It's a joke. It's very funny to him and to younger voters. Older voters are thinking, what are you talking about? That is not appropriate for you to be saying. At the same time, it's the same conversation. If he can bring out those younger voters, I don't know enough about the demographics of that specific district, but if he can bring out those younger voters and convince the establishment Democrats that he has turned a new leaf, he could really gain support. At the same time, there are enough established Democrats in there, like Assemblyman Alex Boris, Assemblyman Michael Lasher,
yeah.
New York City Councilman Eric Boccher. There are enough people in that race that I don't know if he makes it too far. I think that they have a lot of support already that they've built up and a lot of funds that they've already raised.
Yeah, especially Lasher.
Yeah, exactly. Those funds are not going to be available to Jack Schlossberg. Whether he can lean on the Kennedy clan to fund some of his campaign is another story.
The other dynasty that seems to maybe gone away is the Cuomo dynasty now. Andrew had his last-ditch effort at the mayoral race and lost, but I just couldn't help but notice how conciliatory he was after going so hard, not even able to pronounce Mamdani's name correctly. What is he waiting for? Is your columnist Chris Churchill right that he might even consider running for the Stefanik seat?
You know, I would doubt it, because Andrew Cuomo does not want to live in the North Country. He wants to live on Long Island or in Westchester County.
Well, he could buy a cabin or a big camp up there.
He could absolutely buy a cabin, but he would not be happy. A little tidbit for listeners, interesting, that Politico had right after the election is the Wi-Fi password at his party was Cuomo 2026. Now, what does that mean? Is he going to try to jump into the race for governor? Is he going to try to run for Congress himself? Is he going to do something entirely different? We don't know. At this point, it's clear that he wants to stay in the public eye to some degree, but how he does that, we don't know. He was trying to really lead on combating anti-Semitism after he resigned from being governor.
Mm-hmm.
That effort didn't make it too far, and I think that he found that he wasn't getting enough attention. He had a podcast for quite a long time, and he really, you could tell that he enjoyed running for mayor. He enjoyed interacting with people again. I don't know what venue he could do that in again that would accept him, because it's clear that if he can't win among Democrats in New York City, he can't win among Democrats statewide. Or he could. You know, every time that I talk about Andrew Cuomo, his advisors tell me that I'm wrong. So yeah. I don't know. I mean, the polling around everything on state politics is so volatile sometimes. Yeah. And you have to look at it from a regional basis. It's possible that he could want to run for Congress in Westchester County. I don't know. Maybe he would want to go up and challenge Mike Lawler for Congress. In New York, you don't have to live in the congressional district to run for it, at least the first time. So he has a number of options available to him. But I can tell you, it's not going to be anything less than that. He's not going to run for a seat in the state legislature. He's not going to run for a spot on the town board.
The New York City Council.
Right. He's definitely not going to do that. He wants to be in a position where he can exercise real power. And being a county executive, for example, that's not going to be that.
Well, and you could just see here, I mean, in his conciliatory speech after losing, saying, no, don't boo. Do not boo Zoran Mamdani. We're all working together. This is our New York. We're going to make it better together. You know, to me, that says I'm open for a position if you got one.
Oh, that's exactly it. And I don't think that Zoran would hire him in
no.
a second. But, I mean, what does that mean for him down the road?
That's right.
He did have a, I wouldn't say close relationship with the president, but I don't think that they had a negative relationship with the president endorsing him in the race for mayor the night before Election Day. That was tough for him to overcome, I think, with some voters. Now, maybe the president has a position for Andrew Cuomo in his cabinet. I don't know. You could very well see Andrew Cuomo become one of those people who says, the Democratic Party left me. I didn't leave the Democratic Party. And I think you saw that in the race for mayor, him saying, we shouldn't go to the left. We should stay exactly where we've been going. I have a track record of proven progress. If you just let me continue doing what I want to do, we can make this city better. He could very well have that same message at a federal agency.
Well, we'll have to see where the political pendulum swings as we go forward. But right now, it seems like the establishment was thoroughly rejected in New York City, including all the billionaires that supported Cuomo and all the others that came out.
Yeah.
But we're in political fickle times, it seems, and we'll have to see what happens going forward. You know, 2026 is still a long way away in political campaigns. He is Dan Clark, reporter from the Times Union, who obviously gives us all the Capital Confidential news when he comes on this program. And he spends the time, and I really appreciate it. Hopefully we can get you to come back if I haven't screwed it up too much.
Always happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.